You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle, and this is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, December 5th, 2018.
So the thing that's actually holding them in jail is this, is the felony syringe charge. And once we can get that dropped, then it's much easier for them to get out of jail without paying bail on their own recognizance.
It is illegal to have a syringe with the intent to use illicit drugs in Indiana. In today's feature report, we'll hear from Indiana Recovery Alliance Director and Founder Chris Abert, who says he'll push for the legislature to decriminalize possession of a syringe in the upcoming 2019 legislative session. Now, that's coming up later in the program.
And our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware, looks at the tracking of private information and personal history by Google. Protecting your online activity on Better Beware, but first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill wants lawmakers to increase his budget by about $5 million. The Republican Attorney General sent two of his deputies to request the increase from the State Budget Committee meeting on Monday. The Associated Press reports Hill did not make the request in person, although other top office holders asking for budget increases did. The State Budget Committee is gathering input before lawmakers write a new two-year budget in January. This is not the first time Attorney General Hill's spending has raised eyebrows. Last year, Hill sparked criticism for spending almost $300,000 to renovate his six-room office. He also purchased a 15-passenger van with his name written on the side. Hill has been serving as the Attorney General of Indiana since January of 2017. Earlier this year, he was accused of sexual misconduct by four women. Republican legislative leaders and Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb have called for his resignation. Hill denies the allegations of sexual misconduct and refuses to step down. For WFHB, I'm Rasha Kamhawi.
Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton announced he will stand for re-election next year. Hamilton announced he will seek a second term as the mayor of Bloomington at a party at Monroe County Democratic headquarters last night. So far, no other candidates have declared they will run against Hamilton. Monroe County Commissioner's President Amanda Barge has set up an exploratory commission to look into her prospects of running for Bloomington mayor against Hamilton in the primary. Barge is not expected to formally announce whether or not she'll run for mayor until January. An Indiana University fraternity has had its charter revoked. Kappa Sigma's national governing body announced the decision to revoke their IU chapter's charter after repeated reports of alcohol abuse and hazing. Indiana University Communications Director Chuck Carney says the university is glad the national governing body for Kappa Sigma acted.
We have no tolerance for hazing or alcohol abuse. There are clear standards of behavior that are part of the conduct code for Indiana University and the Greek agreement with the fraternities and sororities, and we expect all of these fraternities and sororities to adhere to the code and to the code of conduct that Greek houses are in particular supposed to adhere to. So for that reason, we're very supportive of the national office taking this action because they saw that there were problems and they've taken care of it themselves.
Chapter members living in the Kappa Sigma fraternity house at IU will have to move out at the end of the semester.
Monroe County commissioners have approved a setback requirement that will allow a planned residential development on South Rockport Road to go forward. This comes despite neighbors' concerns about the PUD's density. The site plan calls for 73 units to be built on the 12-acre parcel. According to Monroe County planner Jordan Yonke, the multifamily development was originally approved in 1996 and is an extension of the existing Highland neighborhood on South Rockport. In the commissioner's meeting this morning, Commissioner Julie Thomas acknowledged the concerns of Highland residents.
They don't want to see a development here. They don't want to see a development this intensive. Just so folks know, I hear you. If this were coming out of the blue, I'm not sure I would be very happy with it, honestly. But because the city approved this, we have two options. If we vote no, it goes to the city's plan, which has a little bit higher density, and there aren't accommodations for those neighbors to the south side that are now in the plan. So, and if we vote yes, we have a little bit less density and a lot of accommodation for the southern neighbors, and then we can change this to a public road, and there's other things that happen. So those are really our only two choices. We had someone on the Planning Commission suggest, well, why don't the commissioners just rezone it? Well, we can't just do that because there's an investment, there's a value to that property, and we can't just take that property value.
The accommodations Thomas referenced include a setback, which Yonke said will push the proposed structures farther north. More landscaping will also provide a buffer for the southern neighbors. In addition, a proposed private road within the subdivision will be public under a new agreement with developers.
Yeah, that was a big concern with the buses because Wickens is windy and hilly, and how are we going to ensure the safety of students? And because if it's a private road, MCCSC will definitely not send a bus, right? But if it's public, they could. It's not guaranteed that they will, but at least they could.
Yonke said the subdivision fits with the county's long-range plans under the County Development Ordinance, currently under revision. In other development news, a new agreement between Monroe County and ABB Incorporated will help the county move forward with a West Side connectivity project. The county plans to construct a road connecting Profile Parkway to Gates and Jonathan Drives. Under the agreement, ABB commits to donating a 90-foot-wide right-of-way from its site at 300 North Curry Pike. Jim Shelton sits on the Monroe County Redevelopment Commission, which has been working on the West Side Connectivity Project. He spoke to commissioners about the benefits of the project and the new agreement.
For the public, this has really got two large benefits. One, it will open up the old ABB site and give us access to the internal parts of it for possible development, rather than having to redevelop the whole piece in one clump. Mm-hmm. Equally important, really, is it will improve connectivity out there. As you know, we've got a real traffic problem out there. This will connect the New Cook facility and then on to the Old Cook facility and Ivy Tech and the other industries into the shopping center area, and then with another project, we'll connect this road across the railroad track to Vernal and 17th Street. So it'll provide a bunch more ways to get in and out of that and around and through that without having to be on either Curry Pike or State Road 48.
Commissioners approved the ABB agreement as well as a contract that will help secure the county's website. Security Services, LLC, a Newstar company, hosts the county's website. Chief Technology Officer Eric Evans said the three-year, $4,000 contract is the most cost-effective way to protect the county's website.
So whenever anyone out in the wild sends any traffic to co.monroe.in.us, it gets resolved into an IP address, and they have control and watch the traffic that goes back and forth between people on the outside and our county. By expanding our business agreement with them, it gives us better control over security services. We have better ways to filter out certain known malicious IP addresses and things of that nature. And it's far cheaper doing it this way than buying a device here on premise to do that. It's probably about 60% cheaper.
The next meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners is scheduled for December 12th at 10 a.m. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB comes from Cardinal Spirits Distillery, located on the B-Line. Cardinal Spirits has opened a new kitchen featuring local, seasonal food made from scratch to complement their craft cocktails. Dinner available Tuesday through Saturday at Cardinal Spirits, South Morton Street.
It's a felony to have a syringe in Indiana. Prosecuting attorneys can level a felony charge against the defendant if they're arrested in possession of a needle. In Monroe County, the number of arrests for needle possession doubled over the last year. That's despite the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office agreeing to throw out many syringe charges. Needle exchanges were allowed to operate in Indiana in 2016. Then Governor Mike Pence allowed needle exchanges to operate across the state only after public health experts and epidemiologists advocated for needle exchanges as the most effective approach to combat the worst HIV and hepatitis epidemic in the state's history. But even while needle exchanges are allowed to change out dirty and infected syringes for clean ones, it's still illegal to carry one. Indiana Recovery Alliance director and founder Chris Abert is working to change that. The Indiana Recovery Alliance is a needle exchange operating in Bloomington. Abert says while the Monroe County Prosecutor's Office has done a great job of throwing out felony needle possession charges, he'll push for the legislature to revisit the law itself in January. Abert speaks with WFHB News Director Wes Martin in today's feature report.
Can you tell us a little bit about the upcoming legislation and that legislative push that you in particular are making?
Before I talk about the legislation, it's not, again, hard for people who are listening to understand that once you get a felony, so I get pulled over and I have a syringe in my pocket. If I get a felony, that means I am no longer employable. That means I can no longer get housing. That means I can no longer get student loans. That means I can no longer vote in many cases. That means I can no longer sit on a jury. That means I can no longer volunteer anywhere. That means that I'm basically a permanent second-class citizen. So it is no small charge. The fact that they made possession a felony is a terrible mistake on the side of legislators in 2014. So I just really want to drive home like how the impact of that type of charge has on somebody's life. So the most effective legislation would be to do what Portugal is doing and just to decriminalize everything and to take money that we were spending on punishment and in the criminal justice system and use it for reactivation and reintegration into community. We know that real connection and role, social role, plays a very high role in whether or not people are using drugs chaotically. Given that we are not going to jump from Indiana to Portugal anytime, the next best thing would be just to decriminalize paraphernalia, including syringes. Our jails have a lot of people in them, obviously 110 people last year that were in jail because of a syringe charge, even if they had other charges. Most of the time when we've looked through the data, the other charges have been misdemeanors, right? So the thing that's actually holding them in jail is this is the felony syringe charge. And once we can get that dropped, then it's much easier for them to get out of jail without paying bail on their own recognizance. So yeah, the second best thing to do outside of Portugal would be to have legislation pass it that just made it so it was no longer a charge to have paraphernalia. And the third tier, which is more likely in a conservative environment like where we are, is to frame it in the sense of officer safety. So as I said, if people are afraid of felonies, therefore they won't declare to police officers, it does put police officers at risk for accidental needle sticks. 33% of officers will have a needle stick within their life, and the majority of them will have multiple needle sticks within their careers. So it's real. It's expensive. The testing that has to be done after that, the stress is, we can't really quantify that, but qualitatively, that is no good for anybody, both the stress for the officer and for their families. And what they found in Connecticut was if people felt that they weren't going to be prosecuted and could declare the syringes to the officers, accidental needle sticks fell 66%. Right? So that's a huge drop in accidental needle sticks. It's, not only is it better for everybody involved in that interaction, but it's better financially. It's better for, yeah, for the stress of the officers and their families. And at the end of the day, it's better for people who are experiencing chaotic drug use that they can be honest and have honest interactions. I talk a lot about how oftentimes people who use drugs, is, oh, they're liars and they just can't tell the truth to save their lives. I just don't believe that. I think that they're put in a position where they have to lie more often than other people. And if they don't lie, the consequences are pretty grave. Like I said, that permanent second-class citizenship. So it creates an environment where people can start being more honest about what's going on with them. And in those cases, oftentimes people can be helpful in ways they couldn't when you actually know what somebody's experience of life is, what's actually going on in their life. So we've wrote up that bill last year. We didn't get a lot of bites on it from legislators. This year we have at least one Republican who is going to introduce that bill in this legislative session. It's the Law Enforcement Protection Act 2019, I think is what it's going to be called. We got some local buy-in. So Sheriff Swain had seen a reason that that would be good both for protection of his officers and for when he's doing intakes in jail, right? So people can, again, say, I have the syringe and not put his correctional officers in any danger of accidental needle sticks. And we've been talking to Mike Dekoff about trying to get his support for legislation like this as well. A little bit of work with the Sheriff's Association and their lobbyist they're not endorsing the bill yet, but are interested in it and had a positive take during our meetings, and some other support throughout the state from different chiefs and captains and sheriffs.
Has there been any outreach towards the Indiana Prosecuting Attorneys Association? It sounds like they're interested in keeping this legislation on the books.
I don't want to sound defeatist, but I wouldn't waste my time going to IPAC and trying to get them to change. Not all, but prosecutors are going to prosecute, right? So at least in this day and age with somebody like Curtis Hill in the Attorney General's office, I don't see that happening. Maybe even previously with Greg Zeller as the Attorney General, he was not able to sway IPAC when the original legislation went through. So what people, I suppose, can do, sometimes feel a little bit deflated by voting and people saying we should vote, but in local elections, voting for your prosecutor, finding out what their position is could possibly begin to sway. Unfortunately, we're steeped in a culture of criminalization and blame, so it's really easy to hate people who use drugs, and that makes you really politically vulnerable if you come out in defense of people that everybody else hates, right? So, you know, even the most progressive liberals tend to steer away from this topic because it's political suicide. So kudos to all of our public servants who are out there talking about this, who are taking political risks. And I mean that on both sides. I mean, you know, from Ed Clear down in New Albany, a Republican introducing this legislation, to Jim Merritt, to Amanda Barge, to Eric Spoonmore, a lot of Shelley Yoder. I know I'm going to miss a lot of people, but a lot of people like stepping up to the plate and making sure that people are protected.
Anything else that you think people should know when they look at the statistic about the number of arrests going up or doubling, between 2016 and 2017 in Monroe County for illegal possession of a syringe?
Again, I think it's a systemic problem. So we can make changes locally. We could, again, have local officers using their discretion to stop charging people for possession of a syringe as one end of it. But really, it's a systemic problem, and it's going to change when there's a critical mass to make a change. So I think people just, one of the things that people can do is talk about their struggle with substance use, talk about their struggle with mental illness, always know that when somebody presents as either in chaotic drug use or homeless, or that there is a story behind that. You know, we make things very one-dimensional. And I think the more we talk about our personal experiences with it, or our family members' personal experiences with it, the more we humanize people and make sure that we understand that people are complex and dynamic and have stories. That's the kind of like slow culture change that can really turn the tide on this, to where we, you know, being incredibly optimistic, I sometimes can bring myself to imagine 50 years from now where we look back and we're just deeply ashamed of the way we treated people who were poor, or we're deeply ashamed that we let so many people die, where we can't even believe the amount of people we had locked in cages. We can't fathom why we would try to use the hammer of the criminal justice system to address our social issues. So that's about as hopeful as I get. Maybe in 50 to 100 years, things will have changed, but it's gonna change partially on these, you know, conversations we have with each other, partially on legislation, partially on what it is that we do tomorrow when we run into someone. And it's gonna take a lot. We are slowly building support among legislators. We're going to be doing education sessions. We're going to go up to the state house and really push it. If there are any law enforcement out there that would like to sign on to this and give a public quote of support, that they want first responders to be safe from accidental needle sticks, which seems pretty easy to buy into, we'd be happy to get a quote from you. Any public servants that want to support this, both locally and at the state level, that would be appreciated. And we just want everybody to be safe, from first responders to people using drugs to friends, family, and community all around.
How do people comment about this or voice their support?
We're still figuring out exactly what the wording is going to be, but they can go to IndianaRecoveryAlliance.org, or they can go to Facebook/IndianaRecoveryAlliance and like and or follow, and then we will be sure to let people know through social media next steps. Probably do something. We really like to show up in direct action. So we'll probably do some type of direct action throughout the legislative session. We'll see. Stay tuned.
Chris Abert with the Indiana Recovery Alliance. Chris, thanks so much for coming on and speaking with us.
And thanks, Wes.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Okay, so you get an email from the Internal Revenue Service. What do? You delete it. Unless it's a reply to an email you sent them, it's a fake, it's a scam, and it's dangerous. There's a shiny new version of the internet IRS scam going around, where the fraudsters send you an email that says something about a tax transcript in the subject line. It appears to come from IRS Online or something like it, and it's completely bogus. The email itself is trying to get your personal information, and the so-called transcript is an attachment that's about as safe to deal with is one of those unexploded World War II bombs they keep digging up in Europe. If you're dumb enough to look at the alleged transcript, you get a holiday gift worthy of Krampus himself, a nasty virus. And if you're on a computer network, like maybe at your work, all the computers on the network can be infected. And speaking of holiday gifts, this time of year, most of us are doing a good deal of searching on the Internet. The biggest, oldest, longest established, and most famous search engine is, of course, Google, which has an estimated 3/4 of all worldwide searching business. But I haven't searched for anything on Google in years. As you may have heard, Google keeps track of whatever you do on their search engine and builds up an amazingly detailed file on you. They use that info to skew the results in their searches and to have all kinds of people and companies send you all kinds of ads and offers, and quite possibly for other purposes we don't even know about. My favorite search engine is called DuckDuckGo, all one word, DuckDuckGo.com. They simply do not track what you search for and do not keep records on you. But now, they're not the only one. Over in Europe, a whole lot of people have way too many bad memories of the really nasty, big brotherish dictatorships they've had such trouble with, particularly Nazi Germany's Gestapo and the various secret services of the Soviet Union. And they have taken to heart the words of an American historian, George Santayana, who said, "Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it." So the Europeans have been launching internet search engines that don't track your usage and don't create so-called filter bubbles, where the results you see are based on what they know about you. There's Quant, Q-W-A-N-T, which is French, Unbubble, spelt like it sounds, which is German, Mojeek, M-O-J-E-E-K, and Oscobo, O-S-C-O-B-O, which are British, and, well, there's no time to list them all, but you can find them with a search of your own, which you will do on DuckDuckGo.com if you're smart. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer and executive producer is Wes Martin. Our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Danny Graff, and Scott Schmadeke. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio. Hereabouts is produced in partnership with the Asian Cultural Center on the campus of Indiana University, Bloomington. That's Hereabouts, Asian American Midwest Radio, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@WFHB.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at WFHB.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.